Chair Kalabia. I just want to make my general announcements as usual. I'll start off by welcoming everyone to this Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting. Today is Monday, November 10th, 2025. This meeting is being recorded, and as always, we place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. Just to provide a few helpful tips, people who are joining through phone calls, if you'd like to make any comments, you can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everybody who's on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you click on the raise hand icon, for some, it might be under reactions. That will raise or lower your virtual hands if people are able to utilize these tools. Excuse me, it's helpful because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. We do request everyone to please stay on mute unless you're speaking because it helps eliminate any external noise. So, in advance, thank you for not unmuting yourself unless you're speaking. As you know, we have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. We request that when people speak, please state your name before you make your comments because it helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It's also helpful for people who are listening on the phone calls and when people listen to the meeting audio, it's helpful for them. we also request speakers to describe themselves briefly when initially speaking. For instance, I'm a female, I'm Asian Indian, I'm wearing reading glasses. I'm wearing a light green and yellow top with a plum color sweater. we're going to have a presentation today, and the presenter is really familiar with the committee, but just as a reminder, please describe your slides. For the convenience of the AAC members and or the members of the public who are blind or have low vision. Chair Kalabia, I can go ahead and read the agenda out loud, and then I can take the roll call of the committee members if you concur.
Sure, yes, please do.
So before I start reading the agenda, I will share it on my screen, and if somebody can confirm if it's visible on the screen, I will appreciate that.
It's there.
It's Rico here. Yes, I can see it.
Thank you so much. So just as quickly as I have finished reading the agenda, we will go to the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Chair Kalabia will go through the review and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. We will have Teddy Kralik. Everybody's familiar with Teddy. He's going to provide an update about bus flag designs. Afterwards, Vice Chair Caffin is going to discuss committee questions, comments for District of Columbia Department of Transportation. And afterwards, we are going to have a committee discussion about comments and discussions that may be just open discussions. At 5:45, we will continue with the public comment section, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I'm going to stop sharing my screen now, and we will go to roll call of the committee members. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster, Darnese Bush. I just want to state for the record that Susan may be a bit delayed joining the meeting today. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Vanessa is joined on the meeting. Rico Dancy.
Here.
Thank you. Tawan Farmer. Debbie Fisher.
Here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Here.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazzell. Just want to state for the records, Philippa did inform she may not be able to join the meeting today. Swathananda Kumar. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Sarah Rod.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Ms. Rush is connected on the meeting. Paul Summerford. Patrick Sheehan. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. At this point, Chair Kalabi, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes. I suggest that maybe we hold off on doing the prior minute meetings, minutes, which would allow more time for people to join us. But the agenda looks pretty good. Do I get a motion to approve the agenda with the exception of the placement of the a review of the meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second, anyone?
Second.
Second.
Vanessa, second.
Yes, approving with the motion and the seconds approving the agenda, delaying the review of the meeting minutes. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved. Let's turn now to Teddy Krolik. Is Teddy there?
I am here, but I'll need to be able to share my screen.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, just a quick moment, you will be able to do that. You
I've
should be.
also asked Anu if she would share her screen with some of the photos I have regarding his topic. But Teddy, let me say that it would be great if you could share with your colleagues the kind of presentations that you make, the illustrations that you share with us right away for discussion. It's really great. And with that, I turn it over to you, Teddy.
Thanks so much. Really excited to be here to present on behalf of Sarah Meyer and the entire customer experience team. The great thing about these projects is that we've been talking about them for a long time with you and with all of our stakeholders, both internally and some externally. But you guys are getting a preview of what we're looking forward to talking about with the larger DMV community over the next couple of months, which is how we make the most accessible bus flag in North America. And I want to state that this is the project goal that we are announcing to all audiences, not just to this Accessibility Advisory Committee. This has been an extremely important piece of how we go about doing our work, has been listening to this group, listening to the professional staff inside of Metro to understand what are the things that we can make, again, a difference in how folks understand, comprehend, view, find important critical bus information. And so we are really excited to share with you today all the progress that we've made since the last time we spoke earlier this summer, where at that point we were still talking about different precedents, different examples from around the country and from around the world. We were talking about, again, what are the things that people are most interested in finding at a bus stop. And today we're going to be able to share with you how we synthesized all that information. And of course, we didn't talk just with this group. We talked with the people who actually install the bus flags, the people who plan the bus routes. We tried to make it so that the people who are closest to the bus flags have been, again, along this journey with us at every step. And we've now entered into what we're calling the prototyping phase. So that means we have synthesized the research and everything that we've learned and actually started to create physical artifacts that we would love to be able to invite this group to come check out. I'm going to show you some pictures today of some of these initial prototypes. We look forward to showing them to you in a variety of lighting conditions. I'll tell you a little later about how we've already started to do that with some of our colleagues from bus operations. The idea being that when we actually take these out into the field and we're not just looking at them on a screen, we learn a lot about how they work, both in terms of how easy they are to read from a customer perspective, but also how easy they are to assemble from a maintenance perspective, or how easy they are to disassemble. So in this prototyping phase, we're really gathering critical information, which will inform the next phase, which is what we're calling engineering. So that's making sure that this is a product that can be reproduced at scale, that we can acquire materials for easily, and that is safe. Finally, we would actually go into implementation, which means you'll see a new bus flag at your bus stop. And that's still a little ways away. I think the earliest estimates that we're giving are sometime summer of 2026. We'd like to be able to start with probably a slow and deliberate process for starting to install these signs, but there are a lot of steps along the way before we get there. So I'm going to continue the presentation now. You can see actually on this slide, I've got a picture showing a site visit that we made with this group. We've got Patrick here, looking great, checking out some of the specially printed braille elements that we are able to produce more efficiently and able to put out in more places thanks to new technology that we have at our sign production shop. And I'm going to move to the next slide now. So as I said, we did a lot of research. We talked with operators. We asked them, how often does your bus hit a bus flag, because the bus flag is positioned in a certain way and is at a certain height. What are the things that we could do to make it easier for you to find bus flags at night? What are the things that customers ask you about that we could, again, better answer if we had that information on the bus flag? We also talked to 1,300 or so customers from a variety of perspectives, languages, usage levels from across the region, to get a sense of what is the information that they get from the bus stop flag itself versus what they get from their computer, what they get from their friends, what they get from a call center, understanding what is actually most important to show at a bus stop. And we talked with so many groups inside of Metro. And as I said before, it wasn't just the people who, again, are making the signs, but also the people who maintain them, the people who design them, the people who are responsible for, again, every aspect of the science life cycle. And we spoke with people from a variety of different agencies across North America who recently have implemented some sort of newly redesigned bus flag. These peers are really helpful because they are able to tell us about things that they got right, but also things that they didn't, and we can learn from those lessons. And in the picture on this slide, it's a picture of bus operators, trainers, and superintendents gathered inside of the L'Enfant HQ office lobby, where we gathered representatives of the bus operations team a few weeks ago to check out the physical prototypes specifically at night and to see how they performed. Moving to the next slide. When we went and did the research for the bus operators, the most important thing that we learned was that bus operators need to be able to see the flag at night. And I can tell you that actually, just last week, we did a second nighttime observation with the bus operations team. We went out to a bus stop about a mile or so away from the new Carrollton office building on MLK Highway and Delwood Court, where there's very few streetlights and it's a very dark bus stop. And we actually were able to take a bus and simulate what it's like to approach that bus stop, looking at the current bus stop sign that's up and then comparing it with our prototype versions. And it really was remarkable to see how challenging it is under current circumstances. The prototypes make a big difference in terms of the reflectivity. The other side here on the right side of the slide, I'm showing the top four elements that we learned from that extensive customer research investigation. And what we learned was that route ID, destination, operating agency, and bus stop ID were by far the most important pieces. After that, we again tested lots of other things, like, for example, website URLs and QR codes and direction of travel and bus stop name and various other pieces. Those all were rated much lower. And so, for a variety of reasons, we've really concentrated on these top four. We think that by focusing attention on them, we've really, again, reduced the cognitive load, streamlined information, made it easier for everybody to understand. Moving to the next slide, I'm showing a wireframe of the proposed bus flag design as it is right now. This is very early on. We're calling this a concept design. The whole purpose is to gather feedback from this group and from others to understand how we can improve it even more. But the main purpose of this slide is to show the specific improvements that we've made on the current flags that are out in the system right now. The first is that we have increased its visibility both during daylight conditions and nighttime conditions by increasing font size. And we've done that, again, consistently across all different sign types. In the next few slides, I'll show you examples of how these bus flags look when there's more than one, two, three, four stops at a, sorry, one, two, three, four routes at a given stop. We've also increased the amount of reflective surface area on this proposed flag. This has been, of course, in response to what we heard from operators. We are showing a proposal where we're bringing together multiple operators on the same flag. So in this case, we're showing a mock-up with Prince George's County Transit, which again, I recognize their branding is not very easy to read, the Prince George's County aspect. That's something that, again, we can work with them on, but this is just using their current actual vector files. We're showing the Metro logo on the left side of the post and the transit for PGC Transit on the left side. On the next slide, I'm going to show you kind of how those elements work together. We've also done our best work in terms of trying to unify both Metro Rail and Metro Bus and making it so that when you're at a metro station and if you leave a bus and you're going to rail or vice versa, you feel like you're still actually traveling on the same company. Right now, because of colors, because of various legacy visual identities, it's not so obvious. For our friends in maintenance and facilities, we've also tried to think about how to engineer this product so that, again, it is durable and it holds up and that we're not increasing costs significantly. In this next slide, I'm showing how we are imagining this two-part sign system where the left side of the flag is really focused on what do operators need to find. So this is where we're putting our most reflective material, showing the specific operator logos so that, again, a bus operator who's driving inside the street can find the stop easily. On the right side of this post, we're showing the info panel for customers. This would be done without reflective material. That's our current idea to make it so that, again, it's not going to create glared conditions. Here, we've got large text for both the route ID and for the terminal. And again, we are focused purely on those four elements that we learned are most important: the operating agency, the route ID, the terminal destination, the stop ID, and the phone number. So these, again, are the general elements that we are looking to implement. And in the following slides, I'm going to go into them in more detail. This is an example, again, of playing with different kind of configurations and different colors. Here, we're showing examples of what potential colors in the current updated Metro brand guide would provide. So showing a capital cream and a monumental bronze. The whole purpose of testing them in real life is to see how these look and how they function for everyone who is observing them. And we're learning a lot as we do that. But this is just to give an idea of, again, colors. For the purpose of this presentation, I'd really like to actually focus on the features more than the colors because, again, the features are the things that we are looking to make more definitive decisions about so that we can start thinking about how we'd actually procure and produce these starting next year. Colors are things that, again, are easier to manipulate, easier to rearrange, and, again, it's going to be kind of a longer discussion. In this next slide, I'm showing how we have three different sign families, or I guess three different members of the sign family. On the left side, you can see a two route bus stop sign where it is approximately 18 by 30 inches and uses 4-inch type. Again, that is significantly larger than how we currently show our two route stops. This is maintaining the 4-inch height that we had on only the single route stops for BBNR, which were already doubling what was out on the pre-Better Bus flags. In the middle panel, we're showing an example of how we would display 3 to 4 roots, where we're able to, again, maintain 4-inch type, which is double what is currently out there. And we're able to do that by extending and making this more of, again, a vertical display. And then on the far right side, we are showing how we'd handle 5 or more roots, which is, again, a very small percentage of the actual stops out there. By our estimates, and we do have, again, updated numbers here, it's around 3% of all stops would actually have 5 or more roots, including shared, again, shared operators. So there we would be using 2-inch type, which is what we're currently showing. So it would not be any worse than what is currently being shown. And it's actually, again, in compliance, in fact, a little bit better than ADA regulation. So we recognize that when it does become 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, it is very difficult to make those work on a consistent basis. In some cases, that is going to require some sort of one-off special production, but we want to emphasize that's fewer than 3% of stops, and we feel that we have a very good sign design for the remaining 96-97%. So for the 3%, we will probably, again, need to look at them on a case-by-case basis. But the important thing is we are still maintaining 2-inch type. It just means that sign itself is probably going to need to be a little bit different. I see, Tino, you've got your hand raised. If it's okay, I'm almost halfway or so through the presentation, and then we can go through questions. Is that okay?
Yep, sure.
Great. So now, again, I'm going to go into some of these features in detail, which is really where I'd like to focus our discussion. So the first is on accessibility. Here we're showing an 1.5-inch height root destination with a 4-inch root ID. This would be the best in North America. We've done a lot of research to show that very few places are actually able to maintain this font size across a wide range of signs. In almost every case, they compromise with some significant reduction in overall size because they need to be able to fit more and more information onto the same panel. Conversely, as you've seen, we've actually tried to simplify the design so that we maintain the space to be able to keep font sizes as large as possible. We believe that this is going to make it easier to view both up close and at distance. We also are emphasizing the improvement in color contrast by not using the red background that's on current flags, by using, again, white text on black, dark background or vice versa. We're able to improve color contrast, and we're able to reduce that overall cognitive load by, again, removing extraneous information. This has been by far the most important piece of our work so far, and I know that this group is going to be very interested in discussing that. The second feature that we've discussed so far is the way that we are presenting our partner agencies. So in a proposal from the DMV Moves effort, there is a recommendation to unify bus stops. That means that instead of having multiple poles and multiple blades, we'd be able to consolidate them onto a single demonstration or a single display. That would, again, make it easier for customers to find information. It would potentially also create a more consistent customer experience. And in this case, would actually increase the size of the logos currently presented. If you look at the current blades that are out there for partner agencies, the actual logos are quite small. In this proposal, we are increasing them, and we are making it easier for people to find the route or the stop that they're looking for. We discussed before as well how rail and bus frequently do not match in their style. Here, we are trying to unify them by creating this shared graphical system. And that way, when customers are looking again for buses or for trains, they feel as if they're in the same system. The reflectivity that we are offering is twice, again, the actual reflective area and quality that is currently shown on the Better Bus flags. We are increasing, again, both the area of reflective surface, but also the quality. And so we're looking at upgrading the style of reflective material. 3M produces a variety of reflective products, and this would be a potential upgrade in terms of how much light it's able to actually capture. And by the way that we have arranged this host and beacon to work together, we believe we're actually removing the mirror strike hazard for bus operators. The way that they're located, it should not be in the mirror strike hazard zone. On this last slide, I'm showing an example of what the actual prototypes look like in daylight. On the left, you can see the monumental bronze. On the far left, you can see to the right, an example with the Capitol cream. We're testing out, again, a variety of elements here. We've got different ways of showing the operators that are operating, and we've also got, again, different color combinations. These are things that we're continuing to test out. On the right side, we're showing how the additional placement of reflective material can make such a big difference at night for operators and for customers. So you can see this was not necessarily how we actually planned it, but in the nighttime condition, in that far right example, the way that the reflective material is placed on the post and the way that it works alongside the partner beacons, it actually creates a mini flag in itself. So there's almost a flag within the flag, making it very easy for operators and customers to locate these signs. One of the things that we learned when we were out the first time a few weeks ago with Maggie Butler and some other members of the bus operations team was that if it's easy to read the text in dark conditions, which it actually is, I can tell you it's with the size and the contrast, the text itself comes through very, very clearly. The trouble, however, was that that text was kind of floating in the air. You couldn't see the background surface or shape as well. By introducing these additional reflective elements, we think that we've made that kind of underlying structure much more apparent, again, both for customers and for operators. So in summary, we are trying to make the best bus flag for all Metro stakeholders. This group is an extremely important stakeholder, and we are really excited to talk about our progress to date and to think about how we can include you guys going forward as we continue to make refinements. So thanks, everyone. I'm ready to take questions.
Yeah, Teddy, I really love the super fonts that you're using. Those are really great. With respect to the our regional or the other bus systems within the region, I think PG County has used in the past the bus, capital T-H-E, capital B-U-S, and you've changed it. Is PG County aware that you've changed the name?
We have not changed it, actually. They have changed it. This is their official branding, and that is a somewhat recent change over the last year. But basically, last winter, spring, they officially transitioned away from using the bus towards the more general Prince George's County Transit. And I agree there's some confusion in that, but we are actually using their most updated branding materials in this.
Good reasoning. The other thing is, for instance, I think in Fairfax County, the bus system is called the Circulator. That's a long name. Are you adapting that name or adopting what they've been using, Circulator?
Yeah, I think in that case, we would be, again, working directly with our partners to make sure that their information is displayed the way that they want it, with the colors that they'd like, with the text. And so this is, again, early on anticipating what PG Transit might request. This is certainly not confirmed with them or with another agency. That's something that we'd look to work with them going forward on and making sure that, again, it's as easy and as clear for customers and for operators to find. So that'd be a great example of something that we're working on in the future.
Okay, thank you. I have some photos that I asked Anu to share. Anu, could you show them, please?
Sure. Did you want me to show them now, Chair?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. If you would give me a quick moment and I will have those displayed on my screen.
One of them is the height of the flags themselves. We've mentioned that in the past, that and you've said that it's in accordance with the ADA, but some of them are so high it's harder for low vision people to see, and I make a suggestion in the, I think it's coming up as the first slide.
This is the first image that you had sent.
Thank you. As you can see, the designated letters and numbers of the bus stop are very high. And I suggest that where there's a white sign saying Bus Bay K, just switch it a little. Take the flag with the bus identifications, like C83 or whatever, take that and put that lower where Bus Bay is, and it'll make it somewhat easier for a few of us to see better. Any comment on that?
I think it's a great suggestion, and it's part of a larger discussion that we're having about how we can be better in presenting bus bay information on a consistent basis, because we're showing this bus bay K on this blade here. That's not how it looks, for example, in other transfer locations. And so we need to create, as part of this bus flag program, a better way of showing bus bays. And I think the most likely response would be to not show it below the flag like it is here, and that would allow the flag to be lower and closer to customers while still being above the ADA threshold. So I think that's a great suggestion.
Thank you. Next slide.
Sure.
Let's see. Yeah. This is one of the LED videos at a bus stop. It's on a bus pole, and it shows very clearly the times when different buses are arriving. If you could lower that, go to the next slide, Anu. On that same pole, below what you just saw, there is a press a button for arrivals, which is great if you can also hear it. And for some people who may have vision problems, it's easier to hear the IDs of the buses. And remind you again, this is on the same pole. It both shows as well as allows a waiting rider to hear when the next bus is coming. Next slide. This just shows that this is the same pole, but it shows you both the braille part. And if you could go a little lower, a little lower, where there's the braille, and there is the big button that perhaps a low vision person can punch in order to hear it, even if they can't read it so well. The next slide. This is in Seattle. The bus stop there has an LED, which shows in larger font. Well, you can't tell it from the picture because the picture is unfortunately too small. But this LED shows when different buses are arriving. And it has a text below that regarding other information, I guess, with respect to any temporary changes in the bus schedule or the bus route. I think the next slide. Yes, this actually is a bus stop in New York City. And I saw it 4 or 5 years ago. And it has nice fonts, not as big as the fonts that you're improving on. It also shows the waiting rider how many stops away the bus that they're waiting for is. In this case, for instance, the M11 is 2 stops away. So you can guess as a waiting rider when it might be coming. Could you lower the the picture a little. Yeah. And more than that, you can tap on the table, on the tablet. You can tap on the tablet for more information. So it's interactive, not just showing or voicing what's happening. You can tap it for interaction. Will there be a kind of interactive way of seeing additional information on any of the bus stops, that bus flags that you're working on?
Yes, those are great examples. Thank you for sharing them. And last week, we were actually looking at some great screen displays from New York City as well, where they were incorporating Halloween imagery and bringing some like spooky ghosts and pumpkins to their bus arrival and rail arrival screens. And we were thinking maybe we could try something fun like that too. So we are also looking at other agencies for inspiration. To answer your first question, yes, there's approximately 900 of those real-time bus arrival screens around the area, and we're looking always to expand them. They are, in some ways, the best and most accessible way for people to get information, especially when the audio buttons are functioning. So the idea that this bus flag would likely be in addition and complementing those screens is an important aspect. And that's actually one of the things that we'd like to test in our next round, is trying to put this bus flag on a post that currently has, for example, a solar panel that is actually providing the power for those e-ink screens, and be able to see just how everything works together, how much space there actually is or isn't, how jumbled it might look. So those are kind of next steps testing that we'd like to look at. But the screens are an important part of the overall bus experience. And we appreciate, again, your interest in making them as helpful and as accessible as possible. I have to say, I also work on those projects. And if you'd like to talk more in depth about the templates that we use, the information that we show, the hardware, I'd be happy to arrange that too.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Teddy. Anu, are there other hands up?
Yes, Chair Calabia, we have several members with their hands up in this order. Steve Caffin, followed by Denise Rush, and then Sandy Newsell, and then Sarah Roth. So Steve, if you will unmute yourself and go ahead and start making your comments, please.
Great. Thanks very much. Hey, Teddy, this is great. The increase in the size of the signs, and also the increase in the lettering of the bus numbers. I know you're playing with colors, but instead of that brown, what about a dark blue? Just because it's a little friendlier, if you know what I mean. Just a thought. The reflectiveness is important. I find at night I may be arriving in a street and I'm looking up and down the street for the semblance of a bus stop, and so I'm looking for that sign. And the other side of the flag, which sticks out with the big M or whatever, that's somewhat reflective, is going to be very helpful. You know, stops have moved, and oftentimes it's either to the left or to the right, and so I think that's going to be very helpful to riders to find their bus. I don't know whether you need a bit more spacing between the letters and the numbers. I'm just not a good judge of this, but they're kind of running together. Yet the C and D are large enough, so maybe you don't. I just don't know, but it seemed as though it might be easier, because when I'm looking for a number, I'm looking for the 94 or the 30 or whatever, and I'm not thinking C, D, or whatever. I'm looking for the number the number of the bus I want. So you might consider putting just a little bit more space in there if that's feasible, but it's not a big deal. I have to mention this at some point. I don't know any writer who understands the difference between C and D. And I do, and I know, and I look at the roots and I understand exactly what the C is doing. However, to an individual that's taking a bus from origin to destination, they may be doing a D and not a C. You know, so the C is useful perhaps to WMATA and the operators, but really has no relevance. I would have made C cross border. So, for example, if it's a bus like the A buses sometimes do, where they'll cross from DC over to Virginia. It may be too late, but it's only been a couple of months now. I would make everything in the district D. And if it's a cross-border bus, consider making it a C instead of an A, which is says Arlington, but yet half of it is in the district. Just a suggestion, because I don't know anybody who understands, when I've talked to people, who understands what C is. Okay, I'm sorry to be. One more thing about the LEDs that I'm Tino, I'm really glad you mentioned those. They're very helpful, especially some of the larger ones. There's one that if you could take a look at, it crystallizes what I'm going to say. When we have a number of buses at a particular stop, such as the case at Wisconsin and Albemarle, right at Tenleytown, the LED gives equal time to the iteration, such that it'll iterate three times, and the last buses will show 20 seconds. And so a person will be standing there. All they want to know is when the next bus is coming, and they have to stand there and iterate. If you could look at that, because the LED signs are so helpful. Thank you very much for those. But people stand there waiting for a long time. And I've overused my time. So look, thanks very much.
I just want to say, Steve, those are some great points. And actually, specifically on the right speed to display information on screens, we are actively testing out some new ideas with that, precisely because sometimes they're not matched well, that it takes too long to cycle through or not enough time. And so we are actually looking at those things. And I think that's another example where we'd love to bring this group out into actual real live street conditions and check them out and see how they're doing, because those do make a difference. So we appreciate your attention there.
Teddy, I've seen a lot of these and in iterations and different bus systems, and you know, I'm glad to be of I'm glad to be a contact if you'd like.
There are a number
thank
of
you.
Other.
Okay, thanks, Teddy. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next is Ms. Rush. Ms. Rush, you had raised your hand. Would you like to go ahead and make your comments? Go ahead, please.
This is Denise Rush. Steve wrote with me a long time ago on a bus route, and he learned some things on that bus route. For PG County, we need, it's been a long, long time, and we keep saying, you know, people keep saying they're going to do this for PG County, they're going to do that. But nothing has been done, and it disturbs me. Well, when Steve went with me, he learned some things, and we need something done in PG County because nothing's being done. And he learned things early with me, and he will, whoever rides with me will learn things because I know the bus routes. But now they've changed the bus routes, so I don't really know the bus routes. Steve?
Steve, yes.
Hello?
Steve.
Yes. Yes, I didn't
Okay.
know. I didn't know that was a question.
Okay, well, did you learn some things riding with me?
Well, you know, Ms. Rush, Denise, if you were, are you talking about the time when you and I got together and looked at some of these and had some real issues?
Yes, you learned some things, but it's almost the same now.
Yeah, that well, you know, I've been out to your area more because I was visiting friends, and you're right. Some of the things we looked at in particular, and they relate to signage too, as well as shrubbery and the like on that main street, and I forget the name of it, that you and I drove down and looked at different stops. That still is the case, so you're right.
Yeah, well, it's been many, many years. When is it going to be updated? Is my question.
Well, this is Tino. Denise, you are marvelous
yeah.
in bringing up PG County to our attention. And because of that, we started by meeting with some of the elected officials or the staff, and we moved on and pressed the chief people in PG County transit, and they came a couple of times, and they recently published their plans for the future. But in addition, they agreed that there are deserts out there, and in fact, they even name the regions, the areas where there are deserts. So what you did, what you got us started on years back, has really paid off. And I'm sure more of us should go with you on the bus to see what you think is the case now. But anyway, it's great that you and Steve did that. There's more to be done, but you succeeded in getting PG County to not only admit, but to designate a show where the deserts are that you had been talking about. Anu, is there another member?
Yes, Chair Club, we have Sandy Newsell and Sarah Rod. Sandy, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks, Teddy. The layout of the flag posts looks really straightforward and clear to me. I know you said you didn't really want to discuss color, but you know, I'm betwixt and between on how to see the bus information most accurately, most easily in the dark at night. And so I have to say that I'm leaning towards the light background but the dark letters, because the larger light area might be easier to sort of pick up the information if it's a dimly lit area for that flag post. Secondly, I'm curious what the bottom elevation is. I know you've told us the height for the bottom of the signs for ADA. And I ask because I'm 5'9" and I have come close to hitting my head on some signs. And I think that the ADA is wise to have the bottom of the flag, the sign, the up high enough that people aren't apt to be hitting their head. And I know there's people who are taller than me. On your digital signs, I am amazed that there are 900 digital bus signs out there already, given that there's about 10,000 bus stops. That's 1 in 10 of the bus stops basically has a digital sign. And I assume most of those are at sort of bus hubs where there's more than one bus coming in. And if you are, I'd be happy to. I'm interested in the cycle time for information. People who have low vision, it takes us longer to grasp what we're seeing if we don't know what we're seeing, to sort of read a sign. So I might be on the, I want the cycle time to be a little bit longer so I can figure out what I'm seeing, as opposed to somebody who can see really well might want it to cycle through very quickly. Come on, get to my information, get to my information. So those are just comments from me. And I grant you, I'm only one opinion of many out there. So I'll let Sarah speak up next.
Uh,
Thank
those
you.
are all great points, Sandy. And yeah, I think what we have found in terms of color contrast testing, both in kind of a theoretical, like computer base, and then also out in the field, is that the dark background does have the highest contrast. And so it, from that perspective, actually is the best. However, for nighttime viewing, the cream is probably marginally better. Not hugely, but probably marginally. And I think there is some question of the balance of how many daylight hours and how many riders are out during the day versus at night. And you could say it's better during the day, but it's worse at night. And that's okay because there's not as many people riding it. Or you could take the reverse and say, well, it's most important that it works at night because that's the most crucial time. And so that's why I said that the color is something that we'll continue to work on. The most important thing is that the text is extraordinarily easy to read. And I can tell you that from first person perspective, and I'd love to do that with you and others to show that. To your other question about the clearance, I'm going to share my screen if that's okay, and I'm going to show you a diagram that we made to answer that question. So, in this diagram here, I'm making it as large as I can, we're showing a few different pieces. It's a little bit complicated, so I'm going to talk you through it. This is showing at for, on the very top side, the 114 inches, that is the average pole height above the grade currently. We're then showing three different versions of flags and how they relate to different height thresholds. On the far right, we're showing the current BBNR flag. In the middle, we're showing the 18 by 45 inch flag that we would be using for three or more routes. And then on the far left, we're showing the 30 inch long that would be used for 1 to 2 routes. Keep in mind that by our estimates, the overwhelming majority of all flags in the system are going to be contained by the 18 by 30 or 18 by 45 signs. There's going to be some examples where there will be more routes than that can be handled by this, but again, we're going to be working through that. On the far left of this diagram, we're showing the estimated mirror clearance height for those buses that we were talking about, the mirror strikes at about 103 inches. So that's giving you all the background. Now, to answer precisely your question, you are asking what is the clearance because you're concerned that there are times where sometimes your head comes very close. What we're showing here is that even in the larger size, the 45-inch one, that we are above the 80 inches required by ADA head clearance. So that is quite a bit of space. You can see that in the 1 to 2 route sign, it's even above that. And so we are confident that we're going to be able to make sure that that headspace is clear and that you will be safe and others will be safe as they're walking by. So that is our estimate. This is exactly the kind of thing that we want to test in the field now. But these are by our drawings. We feel that we've done a good job. And these actual dimensions are probably going to change at some point as we continue to refine them. So this is where we started. This is again a proof of concept. Now we're going to further refine and make it even better.
Great.
Great, thank you. Sarah, you are up next. And after Sarah, Vanessa had raised her hand, but she has lowered it. So we can check after Sarah if she still wants to make any comments. Sarah, please go ahead.
Thanks. Teddy, yes, I want to echo my colleagues in saying thank you so much. A lot of this looks just great. I mean, I appreciate you coming to us and taking our input and taking it seriously. And also really like a lot of what you've done. The huge numbers and letters look fantastic. I might actually disagree with Sandy for once and say that I like the light on dark, because I generally do. But I take your point about the daylight versus nighttime, and I think I'd have to see them in person. And I know that there are people that don't like the light on dark, that it can bother. I mean, everybody's different, as we've all said. So it's got to be kind of a some sort of a complicated trade-off that we're going to make in the end. I also really appreciate Tino bringing up the electronic type signs, the LED. So glad to hear that we're working on getting more of those. Those are certainly wonderful. My only experience finding one of the buttons to push for audible information, which I was very excited about, it turned out the button was broken. So that was very disappointing. But that is the sort of thing that I would love. And it reminds me, just looking at where it was on the pole, so not talking about the sign itself, but the pole, that is where I think I would want sort of the maybe the emergency information or the really basic information that currently is in tiny print at the bottom of those flags. So like the phone number to call for an emergency and exactly what stop I'm at. And I think I would like that in a tactile format, even though I don't personally read Braille. I think if there were a problem, that's where I would want it, where I can actually like feel it, find it, see it at eye height. And it didn't have to be big to stick out to hit anybody in the head. It can be a small vertical sort of sign, like what Tino was showing with the buttons to be pushed. And I think this had come up before. I mean, since that information isn't going to change, like the number of the bus stop, hopefully, and the phone number, I don't think you run into as many issues with like flags needing to be changed out if the routes change or things like that. So my one suggestion would be kind of revisiting putting some of that information down lower. Other than that, again, that great presentation, and we really appreciate you coming out and talking to us. And I'm happy to go out and look at more flags.
That's great, Sarah. And I think that we are still looking actually and doing that eye level tactile panel. That's kind of part of a larger package that we'll be looking to test out as well going forward. So we have not forgotten, and we're continuing to look at options there.
That's great. Anu, anyone?
Yes, Chair Calabia, Vanessa Coles had she had raised her hand, but she lowered it. So I just wanted to double check. Vanessa, did you want to make any comments? If not, we can move on to the next person.
My hand is up for 10 seconds.
I see.
No, I do not. I'm sorry. That
Oh,
was
okay, no problem.
nothing.
Thank
Thank
you. Thank you. Go.
you.
Oh, Vanessa, I'm sorry.
Steve, go for 10 seconds, you said.
Oh, okay. Yes. Teddy, congratulations. This is extraordinary. These signs are better than anything I have seen anywhere in pretty much all respects. Very quickly, the people who write the messages for the LED, that is the written messages, have to be cognizant of the lengths, because oftentimes all they need is a brief phrase and they write a long sentence that may take 30 seconds or even more to iterate. And some are not needed, please be advised that this particular route, the D90, has an operator shortage, and therefore the buses may not be running as frequently. Well, if a person is standing at the kiosk, that's really irrelevant, and that takes 30 seconds to iterate along with the web address. All they want to know is, I don't at this point, I don't care how long it's going to take. When's the next bus coming? So you might talk to the team that does that, because it's part of our signage. And the other thing, the other quick thing is, I don't know why the city of the why DC is putting garbage cans right next to the signs. If you ride around and look where these big garbage cans are being placed, for some reason they decided that they would be placed right at where the sign is, and you may want to have a discussion with them. Thanks very much.
Yeah, actually, Steve, as I said, I do work on those projects, and we are working to reduce those scrolling lengths. And we'd love to talk with you about our ideas for improving them. In fact, you'll be seeing some changes rolling out immediately at certain locations where we are clipping that URL, where we are looking to again make it so that you're getting the essential route arrival information faster and more regularly. So we agree with you, and we'd love to show you our progress.
Anu, is there anyone else?
Chair Calabria, that was, we do not have any additional hands up at this point.
Okay. Well, Teddy, your attempts to involve as many people as possible with making it so easy for us, that's super. You're the best in that. Some of the things that Steve said, you might note that Steve has even written a book on traveling through Europe by bus. So he has wide experience. But anyway, thanks, Teddy. I can't compliment you enough on how you engage riders as well as groups like ours in the work that you do. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that very much, Tino. And as I said, this is still a concept. So we're going to continue showing this to as many people as we can and collecting ways to make it better. And one of the most important things that we're going to be saying is that we made commitments to our accessible partners. And we do not want to compromise on the essential features that we are proposing here, especially in terms of font size, legibility, color contrast, and again, reducing that cognitive load. So those have been essential for us, and we think that you're going to, again, be very important partners for us as we continue with this project.
Thank you again. And it just occurred to me that there's also sometimes a problem with glare. And I remember seeing a model bus shelter which has a an LED, and the way that they show it, they advertise it as dealing with glare. And I'll send that to you separately. But thank you
Glare
for.
is essential. And we again are thinking about the relative balance that you have to strike between reflectivity and anti-glare, because what works for one side does not work so well for the other. And that's why we've tried to kind of separate those two functions. And I'd love to work with you and with Anu on getting everyone out to test these out, whether at day, at night, at dusk. We'd love to talk to you sooner rather than later.
Okay, thank you very much again, Teddy.
Thank you, too.
And next, Anu.
Okay, our next, thank you, Teddy. Our next topic is committee questions, comments for District of Columbia Department of Transportation.
Yeah, I think Sandy wanted to add to what would be discussed in this point, right, Sandy?
Now, this is what Steve wanted to talk about.
I'm embarrassed to say, would you please remind me the issue? And I'm glad to speak about it. I saw this listed, and I think I saw it listed last month, although we didn't have a chance to get to it. Could you just remind me what brought this about? And I'm then glad to speak about it.
Well, it
Did
dealt with.
it relate to the bicycle lanes or something else?
Well, it could be that, but as well as how buses in DC in particular are affected by drivers who illegally park in bus lanes, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Think it
No,
over,
yeah.
and we can maybe you can outline some of the things that you would like to
And
talk to the
oh
DOT
sure. Well,
about.
I'm glad to speak about that. In fact, yeah.
Want to speak about it now?
The quite some time ago, 5 or 6 years ago, Washington, D.C. had an influx of out of area buses that began running routes up to New York City, and down south, New York City, and further on to Boston. And while there was a bus station set up in in Union Station, these buses were given stops throughout the city, and some of them were unusual because they wound up blocking traffic, particularly the right lanes, which the DC buses use. One flagrant example was at DuPont Circle, and where right at DuPont Circle, a DC to New York bus was given the right of way in that right lane, and the buses, the not only traffic but also the buses that move into the circle have to veer left. So that's a particular, it's a particular issue. I don't really have an answer. I've written a couple of times to the DC DOT to let them know, and I've also written about the bicycle. It's, what's interesting, so Tino, that's been ongoing, and I haven't really seen any changes from the standpoint of our constituency. These buses are up against crosswalks, and so in some of them, people actually have to walk into the street and look to the left to see if there's traffic coming. It's particularly dangerous to those who need to have perfect visibility or need assistance in crossing the street and have to deal with the situation. But it's been ongoing and hasn't and you know and hasn't changed. The other thing I'll quickly note, and then I'm going to open it up because these two issues are all I know with respect to DDOT. The bicycle lanes, which have created long lines of traffic, including buses, because the bicycle lanes have in effect taken one or two lanes of traffic and capsulized them into a single lane going each direction. And buses are in that line of traffic. And when they have to stop, all the traffic behind them stops. The good example that we all discussed was Columbia Road. What I've noticed is there seems to be a hiatus, and I don't know whether it's a budget hiatus or just enough residents complaining about the disruption, because it disrupts the small businesses, because people can't park in front of the businesses to run inside and get things since the bike lanes are there. But I haven't seen any new ones in the last 6 months. So that may no longer be an issue, which was a big issue for the DC bus movement at this time, in any case. And
Steve, this matter is something that we should bring up with the District of Columbia, a Department of Transportation. I'll say, though, that with respect to bicycles, Mayor Bowser did cancel at least one bike lane that I know about in Northwest Washington. I think it's on Arizona Avenue. Maybe the others have been canceled, I don't know. But you're right. The bicycle lanes have affected small businesses in particular because people can't park and get to those small businesses. They affect us in crosswalks where we have to cross them to get to a bus island. So think about other things, Steve. And we should bring back somebody from the District of Columbia Traffic. I can't remember her name, but she came several times 3 or 4 years ago. She was very good in
Yes.
response. So
Yes.
think up something, and please, other AAC members, BRS members in particular, if you can come up with how bus lanes or bicycle lanes and illegal parking in bus lanes or whatnot, how this affects us, we could bring it up with DC government and maybe with other governments. In any event, are there any other hands up on this matter? Because I know that Sandy wants to discuss an issue too. Any other hands up now at the moment?
Sure, this is Anu. I do not see any additional hands up at this point.
Sure. Okay, Sandy, you asked for time to discuss several matters. We're on score on time at the moment. We have plenty of time to do that. So please introduce your topic and the subtopics, in fact, and discuss them with us, and then we'll have questions and answers.
Okay, so this is Sandy Neuzel. There's 3 points about signage. I mean, there's more than that, but I wanted to bring up 3 points. And as a committee, we can ask WMATA for explanations, and WMATA, aka Teddy Krolik and Sarah Myers, has asked us for input. So the first one is that I want to mention is from our committee. Several people have mentioned the inconsistency of signs to tell you where the elevators in particular are, but also, we should be informed where escalators are too. So my question is, often on a metro platform, that information is on signs on the far side of the rail line, which can be difficult for low vision people to see, but it often is also on the, I call them pillars. They're sort of the square pillars that are turned at 45 degrees. So they're kind of like a diamond standing on the platform. But the sign, it's usually a symbol, a round symbol with a wheelchair pointing, and I think it says elevators or escalators. I can't remember always, but Sarah can help me out here, that will point the direction you should go on the platform to find it. Because, sometimes those are in the middle, sometimes they're at one end, sometimes that they're at the other end. But the issue is those, if it's on a square pillar, if it's only on one side, you have to walk all the way around to find it. As you approach that square pillar, as you're walking past it, either way, if you're approaching it or walking past it, you're sort of seeing two sides to that square pillar. So I guess my suggestion would be whenever there's a sign pointing you to the elevator, it should be on two opposite sides of that pillar so that if you walk past side one and two, going one direction or past side three and four going the other direction, or if you approach the pillar so that you're seeing panels one and four, or approach from the other direction so you're seeing panels two and three, you'll always have a chance to see a symbol telling you which direction to go to an escalator. So that's my first point. Any comments on that, or suggestions or thoughts?
That's great. I haven't been down to L'Enfant Plaza, but I know that you and I experienced the problem of finding the correct exit or entrance before. Have you been down there lately, or is there any other metro station that where the problem exists?
So Tino, I'm trying to stick to one topic at a time. So,
Sure. Okay.
and I wasn't even going to get to that topic tonight because there's other topics to discuss. So just
Go.
finding elevators and escalators, and this also should be information on especially the metro rail station in Roslyn, which has three different entrances and the elevator's only at one of the, well, there's maybe it's at two of the entrances, but on pillars outside of the metro station there, it would be helpful to have enough signage to indicate to a person who needs an elevator which way to go. So I want to open it for thoughts from anybody, and if there's no thoughts, we'll move on to the next.
Well,
Sarah,
I'll jump in.
I
Since
just
I was, go ahead.
one example. I think another example is at the Bethesda station. It's hard to find out where the elevator is, so
Okay.
that may be another example.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
there's another example. The Tenleytown station, which has an extremely long escalator. When I go to Tenleytown, I look for the elevator, and half the time, and I'm looking for the sign, the little diamond pillar that Sandy mentioned, and sometimes it's not on all the pillars. Sometimes I find myself walking in the wrong direction, and I should know by now, but I find myself walking in the wrong direction because I can't seem to find a sign. And then turning around and walking the other direction. So I think what Sandy's raising is important, and also maybe an issue of consistency too. Yeah.
So maybe I should have said, please raise hands. And I think Sarah raised her hand.
No, actually, I didn't. I just jumped in too.
Okay.
That's okay. Yeah. So exactly what Steve was just saying happened to my daughter and I. We got off of a train, and I don't remember which station it was, but it wasn't one of the complicated ones. But obviously, she's in a wheelchair. She's got perfect vision, and we were looking around, and for the life of us, we could not figure out where the elevator was, which direction to go. So we started heading up the platform one direction. It wasn't until we turned around and came back the completely opposite direction that we found any signs, because they were only on one side of one of those pillars. And Sandy, I think it actually needs to be on all four sides, because if you're walking one direction on a platform, you're only
Yeah.
seeing sort of the one side of it. But then I noticed as I was on a trip the other day by myself, as I was going by different platforms, they would stop, the doors would open, and I was looking up at those signs Sandy was talking about on the far side of the track. And like some of them had signs saying the elevators or the handicap symbol, the wheelchair symbol, and some of them didn't. And it just seems completely random. And so my question is like, well, we need some consistency. Like people need to know where to look.
Right.
Right. So along those lines, Sarah and everybody, thanks for the input. And I know that Philip Weintraub has also commented about this, and I think it was Union Station that you mentioned, Sarah. And
Okay.
can
Check out
t
Bethesda tomorrow. I've wondered before where the elevator is, and so I didn't find it readily. So I'll check Bethesda again. Maybe it's one of the problems that you're bringing up, and we should collect specific examples, like
or
Bethesda, Tenleytown, or wherever.
yeah. What I was going to suggest, Tino, Anu, is it possible to ask WMATA to explain to us what their rationale is for how and where they put elevator signs, and so that we can make a plea to make it more consistent, so that we
Bring
can,
that up. BRS meeting. Yes.
yeah.
But like I said, let's identify specific ones and a problem. Anu, keep that in mind for the next meeting or so. Okay, the next thing you had to say, Sandy?
Okay, so a little bit of a free-for-all here. So I wish Teddy was still on, because he asked us two questions at a recent meeting and wanted feedback. And I know we kind of gave him some feedback at the meeting, but I think we could give him more feedback if people have thought about it more. So the first question was the in their Metro Rail branding plan, they want to be consistent, and I appreciate this concept of being consistent about what order the colors should be in for Metro Rail lines. And some of the possibilities were the order that the rail lines were built in and opened, or the alphabetical order, or the order that I liked, but not necessarily everybody else likes it, was the metro rail station, excuse me, the metro rail lines that are at a higher level in a station before the ones that are at a lower L, the lower level. And that's pretty consistently the red line is always above the, I think it's always above the yellow and green, but it's always above the blue, orange, and silver. And so they were thinking of that order. And they want to use this order for maps, mugs, t-shirts, signs at the metro rail station. So, you know, if you guys have thoughts about the order, those.
Andy, we're lucky that I think Teddy is still with us. We
Okay,
can.
so he can hear our answers.
I'm here. I'm here.
He's here, so.
Does anybody have any preferences other than the elevation? I'm a geologist. I tend to think in layers, so other people may think differently.
Second Vice Chair Newsel, this is I know Vanessa Coles has raised her hand.
Go ahead, Vanessa.
Vanessa?
Vanessa, if you will unmute yourself. There you go.
I'm sorry, just got unmuted. I was just wanted to go back to the elevators, the outside elevators, and I don't know if I haven't ridden in one in a while, but has anyone ever mentioned the speed of those things? I mean, it is claustrophobic in there, and it seemed like it takes forever to go down and come up. Has that been considered?
That might be an engineering way out of our scope. I know the newer elevators
Okay.
on the new Silver Line stations are quieter and faster, but I think it has to do with the mechanics and the engineering, and elevators are unbelievably expensive to replace. But
But I
finding
was
them
just
is
wondering, it's been
important.
years since I've been. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, next is Sarah Roth. Sarah, go ahead.
Yeah, Sandy, so I think I actually agreed with you at the time that I liked the logic of the levels or depth or whatever we're going to call it. The one drawback there is I'm not sure that's going to be obvious to people, and I don't know if we care that it's obvious to people or not. Whereas some other things might be more readily logical. I don't know. I mean, again, I guess getting back to consistency, I think if some as long as something is picked, and it doesn't create offensive problems, it's all good.
Sarah, you're the queen of consistency, and
Am.
I think, you know, the logic for it may escape a lot of people, but if you can explain it to them that you know, red is above yellow and green, that's why on the map you'll see the red go through the station, but the yellow and green sort of breaks because it's underneath the red line.
I
They
did
might
not know
learn.
that. That's exciting.
They might learn it, but if it's always consistent on maps and signs, I think that's a huge step forward. Any other hands up, Anu?
I am not seeing any additional hands up at this point now.
Okay, your topic,
Three? So I'm actually going in reverse order. This was the most recent one, I think, that Teddy asked us about the they're testing out. It's sort of a beta test of signs at five different stations at the manager's kiosk to alert you that you have to ask the manager, no, excuse me, that there is an accessible bathroom available. And I think it points the direction, or you can ask the manager what direction, and then the I can't even remember, shame on me. The manager has to unlock the door for you to go in. I think that's the deal. So
that's it.
the colors, Teddy showed us five different colors, combinations. There were three different colors. It was the metro bronze, and there was either a white or sort of a cream color. And there were signs where the background was dark and the lettering was light, and then vice versa, the lettering was dark on a light background. And I'm the queen of, I like dark background with light letters. And I am on the fence about the bus stop signs, Sarah. I'm not sure which way I think is best. But anyway, has anybody else had a chance to see them? I went to see at Cleveland Park, where it was light letters on a dark background, but up on the manager's kiosk, the sign almost got lost because the station's dark. There's a dark sign and it sort of bled into other dark stuff. I would love to have a little white border around that sign so that I could, it would stand out more to me. Oh, this is a different piece of information. It's not just a part of the manager's kiosk. And I think that that modification would be fairly simple for the sign factory to do, printing plant. But has anybody else had a chance to see any of the signs?
Well, my experience from way back is that there were no signs at all. And it's almost as if there were no restrooms. So we're beginning to get some improvement, as Sarah Myers has told us. With respect to Sandy's question, Teddy, if you're still there, do you have any thoughts? I don't
Yeah,
know
I'm
if he's.
here, guys. I think the key thing is that, as we said at the presentation by Sarah at the last meeting, was that we're actively again doing a full assessment of all the restrooms and really trying to think about how to make it clear which ones are accessible and making sure that we're communicating those clearly to customers. Because again, if it's not accessible and it's not safe, then we need to make that clear so that people can make their trip planning decisions accordingly. And I think in terms of being able to see the different color combinations, I know that was a follow-up question that I had an email about with Anu after the last meeting. I think that the best way we can do that is when we are able to start again expanding on the pilot program to invite you guys out to those places and check them out in person. Because again, what it looks like on a screen is not necessarily the best indication of how it actually functions. And I think that being able to see those different color contrast ratios in person would be really helpful. Were there other questions, Sandy, that I could help with on that?
No, absolutely. Seeing it in person is the best. And I confess I haven't had the time to go check out any of the other stations where that you have them up, because I wanted to see one that it was a light background with dark letters and see how much my brain noticed. Oh, there's a sign I could read if I take the time to stop, lead in, and read it. But yes, a site visit would be with the different colors would be
So
great.
right now, the only pilot signage up is that blue background with the white text on it. That's the only current pilot signage. What we were talking about at the last meeting was getting your input on what makes sense for future ones. So it's in the future that we'd be able to try out these other color combinations. So it's not far away, but they're not out there right now.
That just goes to show you dark and light are what compute for me. Whether it was, I thought it was bronze, your new bronze. I didn't see it as blue because my brain was thinking, Teddy told me it's bronze. Ah.
Well, but to clarify, what is out there right now is blue in those few pilot locations, but we showed you options on the screen that were
Right.
bronze because we were thinking ahead.
Yeah. So I misunderstood. But anyway, yes, if you could do a site visit or, even if all five are in one place, that would be awesome to go take a look at. And anybody else have your hands? Oh, so Teddy, I don't know if my thought of having a narrow border around the sign is not too much more expensive, because I know that the AAC shouldn't be asking for all the bells and whistles in the world because money is always an issue, and we sh but would a putting a border, a contrasting border around be possible?
I think it's a great example of something to bring up when we look at them in person
Okay.
and to see. And I think that's a reasonable suggestion, and that's exactly what we want to hear, is how we can make incremental improvements and make it so that, again, it's as useful as possible because those little things can make the difference. So I think it's a great suggestion, and we just need to find a way again in time to bring you guys out.
Okay. Any other hands up, Anu?
I am not seeing any additional hands up.
Okay.
One additional point, Sandy, I just realized I forgot to mention is that I do have some exciting personal news to share with this group, which is that I'm hoping to go on paternity leave in the next week or two for the birth of
Congratulations.
my second child. And so
Congratulations.
the work will continue. Don't worry. There will be other members of our capable team who keep you updated over the winter. So if you don't see me, I hope that you're not concerned. And no news yet, but hoping again sometime before Thanksgiving is the current goal. So there's still work to do before then, but I just wanted to let everybody know that so there's no anxiety.
Well, congratulations, Teddy. Hope it all goes smoothly.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, if there are no other questions or comments on the topics that Sandy has brought up, let's see. Now, we've thought about two things: discussing with the Department of Transportation of DC government various items, and to backtrack, Steve, you're going to list some and we'll get suggestions for other items to bring up. Sandy, are you hoping that maybe we'll have something on a next bus rail subcommittee topic meeting, a topic related to the three things you brought up? Are you
I'm here. I'm always a little fuzzy how we have to handle this. You know, if Teddy's here, he's listening. Do we have to make a motion and vote on something? If people haven't actually looked at something, if they don't even have opinions about it, then where does it go? But Janice Samuel, who's not officially on the committee, but she can weigh in with low vision opinions. Sarah Rott, myself, and Philippa Mazzell. Philippa's not on the meeting tonight either, I don't think, but we all have different ways. Our vision is different. We are all low vision. So our input could be four different kinds of input. And so even though I'm always speaking up, I'm only one opinion. And as Sarah said, you know, we do have to reach a logical compromise, as Teddy said, for the bus stop signs. You know, should it be a light background or a dark background? Which is easier to see at night? What fraction of the people are actually riding buses at night? You know, there's trade-offs to try to make the most informed, best decision to serve the most riders. It's a challenge, but you know, maybe you all can give me advice whether we need to have a motion to put forward or just write up a recommendation to pass up to management, or just say that, well, Teddy was here and he's a smart guy and he was listening and he'll pass it back to Sarah. I don't know how to handle this. I really don't.
Well, what I was wondering is agendas in the future for the bus rail subcommittee. So you've introduced some topics. Should we put them on? And topics don't have to re don't require a vote to bring them on to the agenda. In fact, Anu sometimes gives us topics that we didn't take to a vote to put on the agenda. So we can let's talk about topics that we're interested in, and we don't need to it's not required for us to name those topics for Anu to put on an agenda. So that's what I'm asking you, if you had any ideas of what you would like to put on the agenda.
Well, more topics would be other kinds of signage in Metro. I only mentioned three possibilities, three topics, specific topics tonight, but more discussion. Like you said, Tino, trying to find the correct exit when they when we were told to meet at exit, I don't remember whether it was A, B, or C, and we
Yes.
couldn't find the signage to get there. The consistency to have signage throughout the station. And I guess what I was asking Anu was, can somebody from Metro staff speak to us about the logic of how they put their signage in stations so that, we could counter that with, this might be more logical. I don't know whether we should speak first or WMATA staff should speak first, but, more
Well,
along those lines.
Sandy.
Yeah. Hi,
Hey.
Pat.
Yeah, I had my hand raised, but
Sorry.
no, that's okay. I just wanted to jump in. I like the idea of making recommendations versus a motion, I think, in this
Okay.
case, because I know that the signage is something that's going to a couple of different groups other than ours. I know the RAC has taken a look at it and mulled over it last at their last meeting, and I think their findings were similar to what we've been saying. But you've got a lot of people that are looking at the signs for a lot of different reasons and have different opinions. So I think collecting the opinions, making recommendations, certainly based on visual issues. But what I'm hearing from other people also, particularly RAC members, is that they like the simple signage. They like the way that it's been set up, so it's easy to read. They like the color contrast, which is similar to the recommendations that have come out from AAC. But it was just ease of use with them. And with this group, it's much more dramatic because of the low vision point of view. But I would say that they're still looking for more research, so I'd go with recommendations rather than a motion. Also, because you've got four people, five people, let's say, and everybody sees differently. And that's a real tough position to have to argue.
Yeah. Well, in any event, not all of the items that come before the bus rail subcommittee are based on votes that have been taken about the agenda topic. So I don't think you have to worry about getting votes before a topic is put on. In her wisdom, Anu has put on some, we put on some, so. The idea, though, is to have specifics at some point that we can put on an agenda. In any event, are there other hands up anew about this?
Chair Kalabi, I don't see any additional hands up.
Okay.
So Tino, I can try to put this, I can write it up as a recommendation and pass it around to the people who have vision issues and see whether there's edits, suggestions, an alternative viewpoint, and bring it to the next meeting.
Terrific. That's even better. Yes.
And I can't remember, but did Sarah Rott have another topic to bring up tonight before we, or have we run out of time? Is it time for public comment?
Oh, we have time.
Sarah
Anu?
raised her hand.
I was just putting my hand up as Sandy was speaking. Thank you, Sandy. I don't have a topic I want to raise tonight, but I have a topic that I would like to get onto an agenda, which I raised at the last the AAC meeting last week, and I sent around an email this afternoon. Unfortunately, it was a few minutes before the meeting, so I don't expect that anybody other than Anu probably noticed that it went out. But just talking about the whole emergency preparedness and standards for handling people with disabilities in those sorts of emergencies. You guys are all welcome to read the note at your leisure, but if we can get it on an agenda at some point and find an appropriate speaker to come talk about it, I think that'd be a great start for what we might be able to do and to offer some improvements and suggestions.
Agreed.
Uh, Anu, I think that would be great for the AAC meeting because everyone really needs to look at that. Yeah, maybe we can put that on Sarah, like in January. or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent, we had a lot of conversation on it before, and I think it's there's a history behind it also that a lot of people haven't been engaged with. And I don't even really know the extent to what they are having emergency preparedness engagements now offering folks to come and take a look and get input from different groups.
And Sarah, the example that you gave us at the last meeting regarding when your daughter in her wheelchair tried to exit at a metro station, was the problem related to the wheelchair itself, or what?
No. So the as I understand it, the train stopped suddenly for a still to me unknown reason, to my
Oh.
daughter unknown reason, and they went and opened one of the car doors manually, but only partially, half the door, and that may have been true of all the cars. I don't know. I don't know what kind of a problem was, if it was electrical or something, but people started flooding off, and my daughter couldn't get out because the wheelchair was too wide to fit through the partially open door. There was a couple of there's a metro staff and I think a transit police officer there, who asked her friends to like lift the chair out, but that wasn't the problem. The problem wasn't that the chair couldn't move, and the problem wasn't that it needed to be lifted. The problem was the door wasn't open wide enough, and they didn't seem to have a clue. So she
Yeah.
ended up being the last person off of the train. I also sent you guys a story from last Halloween, as it would be, of a different but also probably even more frightening incident that happened to her on a train with an emergency incident. But I will let you guys read that for your own interest.
I haven't seen it. When did you send it?
I said it just a few minutes before the meeting started. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I
right.
had been meaning to send it and I forgot about it until the last minute and thought, oh, I'll get this out before the meeting, but no one would have had time to read it.
No, I didn't see it. I'll look at it after the meeting. Are we up for public comments now, Anu?
Sure, we are at 5:43. We can definitely go to public comments, Chair Calabia. And with that, beginning the I'm sorry, I just see Steve raised his hand. Steve, are you trying to make a quick comment, or did you want to make some comments during the public comments?
Public comments because they don't relate to what we were just talking about.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you. So I just want to remind any members of the public, if you'd like to make comments, share any concerns that you may have experienced, you can either raise your hands. If you are calling through a phone call, you can press star 9. If you are connected through the video conference, you can click on the raise hand icon. And for some, the raise hand icon might be under reactions. This will help us knowing how many speakers we have, and we can take them in the order received. Each member will receive 2 minutes, and that's practice just to make sure that if we have multiple persons who would like to make comments, everybody gets an opportunity to do so. Chair Calabia, I am actually not seeing any members of the public with their hands up. Perhaps we may not have any members of the public for public comments on this meeting at this point. Did you want to go ahead and take comments from the AAC members?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Steve, go ahead and I will turn on the timer when you start speaking.
Okay. Thank you, Anu. I'm sorry, Teddy's still not here because I would pass this on to him, but hopefully he'll see it in the minutes, and Sarah will too. I'd say, one out of three or one out of four buses, there's a sign that's incorrect and it's also misplaced. The sign is next adjacent to the first front forwarding facing seats. And the sign set is the same sign that's used for the three seats on the sides that go up for wheelchair secure. And The problem is the sign is incorrect because it says federal regulations require that these seats be available to persons with disabilities and seniors, which I understand is a regulation. But then underneath it says wheelchair securement location, and it isn't. What was done was to just duplicate the proper sign with you know, and place it there. I'd say it's in maybe one out of four buses, and that should be corrected because it's not a wheelchair securement location. I would also suggest that that sign be shortened. Tino, in Seattle and in many other cities, they have that, but they have it much briefer, such as priority seating for persons with disabilities and seniors, without needing to restate the law. It makes it a lot easier for, you know, for the rider who's entering to take it, to see exactly what action they need to take. So I'm raising that. I was hoping Teddy could see it because it relates to signs, but it'll get in the minutes nonetheless. So thanks very much.
Okay. On your point, if the wheelchair securement isn't really located where it should be, where should it be? I mean, you said.
Oh no! Actually, Tino, the sign is correctly located, adjacent to the side seats. As soon as you enter the bus, those side seats on either side can be raised for wheelchairs and also for strollers, according to the policy. However, as you continue to walk into the bus, the first front-facing seats have that sign too. And maybe Mr. Blake can clarify. My understanding is those front-facing seats also, per ADA regulations, require that the priority status. However, they're not wheelchair secure locations, and that sign is so large that it's blocking the views of the people who sit there. And those seats are the most popular seats for our constituents. And you know, besides the signs being incorrect, they can't see through the windows. So,
as I recall, when you walk in and you tap and proceed into the bus, on the right-hand side, there are four seats, and there is the sign that you mentioned, and it does refer to securement. So, is that the wrong place for that sign?
No. Oh, no. No, that's... Why am I raising my hand? No, that's absolutely correct. However, okay. If you proceed into the bus,
yeah,
to the seats that are facing forward,
yes,
first rows also have those in about, I'd say, one out of four buses, maybe one out of three buses, also have those signs, and those seats are not wheelchair secure locations. The signs were probably misput up inadvertently a long time ago, and they just need to be either removed or corrected.
So won't be on the new buses, but if they exist at all, they're incorrectly places on maybe older buses.
It might be. I can't really tell where they are, except they're, you know, this. I think we're talking longer on this than we really should. It's just somebody has to take a look at it and just correct the sign, because those seats cannot be raised as wheelchair secure locations, as the seats that you were mentioning, the four on one side and the three on the other, can.
Next time, if you could take a picture, and you have in the past taken photo issues.
I have a picture, and I can send it to you within 15 minutes and you can circulate it. I took it earlier today, but I'm not as adept at getting things to a new as you are.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, as you have in the past, and in particular in this case, it'd be really helpful if we could see where you're mean, the kind of sign, what it says, and where it's placed. So if you sent it to us, we can look at it again. In the meanwhile, Anu, are there any other members who have public comments? I think
Realize
you're.
I was yes, I realized. Thank you. Yes, I don't see any additional hands up at this point. However, Dr. Butler just wrote a note, and I just wanted to read that for the record. She wrote
Sure.
that we can review with our partners, Steve.
Review with whom?
With our partners or
Internal stakeholders. Once
internal
we have
stakeholders.
the information, we can review with the internal stakeholders.
Oh, you mean staff?
Correct.
Oh, okay. So, what you said then, Steve, should be shared with the staff who deal with these matters. But I'd like to see, and you said you've already sent it to the membership, and I will review it myself. And what
Oh.
Maggie is saying is that it could be shared with staff that are responsible for these kind of matters.
Okay, now should I, per the way we do things, send the photo to you and Anu, and then you can send it off as appropriate?
I thought you sent it to us already.
I did a while back, but I actually wanted to raise it again because Teddy was here, and it hasn't been corrected, and it's those are seats which won't go up if someone tries to get them up for wheelchair or stroller purposes, and
So the signs sound like they're really misplaced.
Tino, I'll send you a picture, and I'll also send it to Anu, and you can perhaps circulate it.
Okay, that's good. It'll help us all understand
Sure.
what you're referring to. Let's see. It's 5:54, and we wanted to. I guess we should quickly go through the October 14th minutes, which I had mentioned. During the AAC meeting, and that's still part of the agenda. We just delayed it in order to let Teddy have more time to deal with things and other people. So I'll deal with it now, Anu. Okay.
Sure, please go ahead.
Yes. Well, briefly, the October 14th minutes, which we itemized last time, dealt with the station restrooms, what the status is of their renovation, and I guess with respect to some of the information related to where they actually are in particular stations. We also dealt with some work plans thing and I mentioned that we should look at open gangways. That's particularly important if we are to, for example, deal with the emergency button whose picture I showed you from Seattle. They not only have a sign related to people who want extra time to exit. Below the sign, farther below the sign, there's a red button where you can, I guess, signal that there's some problem with the exiting or any kind of problem, I guess. Anyway, we also dealt with bus rapid transit and comments for DC Department of Transportation, which now Steve is going to elaborate on in writing, so that we can invite the Department of Transportation to talk about bus lanes, bike lanes, that sort of thing, and other things that Steve mentioned earlier in the meeting. Let's see. Oh, I guess hearing that, is there a motion to approve the October 14th bus rail subcommittee minutes? Any motion?
So moved.
Okay, a second?
I second.
Thank you, Steve. Having gotten affirmatives on approve the motion as well as the second, do I hear a vote to approve the minutes in full?
Yes.
Hearing objections, those minutes are approved. And let's see, I'm looking to see. Oh, we've got two more minutes. Does anyone want to bring up anything in the last 2 minutes?
This is Sandy. I'd like to remind you that at 7 o'clock tonight, the American Council of the Blind is hosting Tom Pei who's going to speak. They're hosting Waymap to give an update. I sent an email, I think a week or so ago, and it's an opportunity to hear what's what with Waymap, since it's hard to get them on board take advantage.
Well, apparently some of our members have tried. On the other hand, I'm still wondering if Waymap can work with wheelchair users. I don't think I've heard that that's been possible yet. But thanks for reminding us about the 7 o'clock meeting. And that's one of the things I'll wonder about when we hear from Tom Pei. Any other questions or comments? It's 5:59. If not, remember to tune in at 7. Oh, did you send us a Zoom address, Sandy?
Yes, the Zoom link was in that email that I sent.
Okay, good. So the Zoom link is there. I see many of you, and I hope more of you on 7 o'clock when we hear from Tom Pei. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tino.
Yeah, thank you.
We covered a lot of ground.
We did. And there's still a lot of ground to cover.